is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Team USA may be out, but we are locked in on a Sunday morning edition of the Lombardi Line, presented as always by BetMGM, alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We got plenty to cover in the NFL as training camps roll on. Plus, this hour specifically honing in on the Dolphins and Packers with some help from Sports Illustrated beat writers Omar Kelly and Bill Huber. Thomas Gable is going to join the show in his usual Sunday spot, hour two as well. Talking college football futures, despite the future of college football looking a little bleak right now. But anyways, Michael, on a lighter note, great to see you.
Stormy. Yes, great to see you. Yes, we haven't talked since, the Pac-12 has dissolved itself away, and we don't know what happened, but it did. There's going to be a lot of behind the scenes, how this happened. I mean, Larry Scott is the biggest villain of all, apparently, with his decision to make it the Pac-12 network, but look, once 108 years just down the drain, it's sad. But pro college football will go on. Let's face it. There's too many good schools, and this will kind of reorganize itself, and we'll get accustomed to it.
It certainly will. I was laughing because I was out there at Pac-12 Media Days, and I got a bag, right? A nice little Pac-12 duffel bag that they give you, and I was joking. It's already a collector's item. Love that.
Save
for
it,
me.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I'll mention to Sienna Lynn, my granddaughter, to look for that on eBay 50 years from now when she has to buy, it might be worth a lot, right?
It's rough life, and you're right, though, about the Pac-12 network. I can't tell you how many times I'd be in Oregon covering a game and at the hotel can't watch whatever game is on Pac-12 Network because it's not available. It's just one of those weird things. But we will discuss that, like I said, college football a little bit later. And of course, as the weekdays get rolling tomorrow on Monday. But I know we're talking a lot of football today. Got to start with football because Team USA. I woke up this morning, Michael, and I turn on the TV and USA and Sweden are just about to start extra time, 0-0 draw. I'm watching the whole thing going to the penalty kick shootout. My heart is racing, and Team USA doesn't get it done. They fall 5-4 in the PK shootout. Just a brutal, brutal way for Team USA to go out, and the first time that they have lost in the World Cup this early.
Yeah, I don't follow soccer as well as you do, but I follow the USA. I root for the USA. I want the USA to win, and this is disappointing.
Yeah.
This is really something that we strive for, to be competitive and to be at the top echelon of any sport that we participate in. So it's rather, when I saw that score, it was rather disappointing.
Such a cruel way to lose in a shootout, yeah. Too. I hate that it has to come down to that. But like I said, out in the round of 16, the earliest exit for the U.S. Women's National Team in World Cup history. This, of course, comes after winning the last two World Cups. And a lack of offense, clearly a big problem for the U.S. women throughout the course of the tournament. Outshot Sweden today, 11-1. So they had their chances, just couldn't capitalize on them. But Sweden on to the semifinals there, +750 shot to win it all. Now England, your favorite at +225, followed by Spain, 3-1, Japan, 5-1. Let's talk about things that are a little bit happier, like the Hall of Fame induction that took place yesterday, Michael, out in Canton, Ohio. 9 new members, including Darrell Revis and Joe Thomas, the two players selected in their first year of eligibility, had an incredible speech from DeMarcus Ware. A lot of stuff, but just what were some of your big takeaways from the induction yesterday?
Well, I was happy to see Don Coryell get in the Hall of Fame. I think he deserves it. I think there's others that belong before him. Clark Shaughnessy, the father of the forward pass, he does. But I was happy to see him recognized. One of the things I wrote about in Football Done Right, which comes out September 5th, was sometimes coaches can't control the circumstances that they're in. And when you work for a bad owner, which clearly has been the case in Coryell's career, originally with Bid Bidwell at St. Louis and then with Gene Klein at San Diego, it's very difficult to match. And that team that they assembled down in San Diego was so talented, but they had contract disputes. They kept complaining about it, and the owner wasn't willing to put a lot of the money into it. If had Coryell been with Eddie DeBartolo, he might have won 3 Super Bowls. So you have to put that in perspective. And I also think, too, that the NFL, there's a movement going on now, which is what I wrote the book is essentially about. There has to be layers to the NFL, mm-hmm. to the Hall of Fame. And, you know, Zach Thomas made a lot of tackles, and he's tremendous, and his numbers stack up really well in terms of when you look at it. You know, he's put 7 Pro Bowls, you know, AP all wanting the first team, you know, 950 tackles, all those stuff, 20 and a half sacks. I mean, great career. But there's other guys that I think, you know, you have to wonder about why they aren't in. You know, Randy Gradishire, for example, he's not in. I think there's not enough attention paid to the older players. Look, Joe Thomas was easy to put in. Mm-hmm. Revis is easy to put in. Those guys are no-brainers. It's the ones in there. Rondy Barber, he has to get in. And this is going to sound mean and cruel, but it's somewhat of a fact. When they put John Lynch in, Lynch wasn't the best player in the Tampa Bay secondary. So once they put Lynch in, they had to put Barber in, who was the best player.
Revolutionized the nickelback position.
This is what happens. And so, yeah, no, it's funny you say that. Buddy Parker, the former head coach of the Detroit Lions, the last man to take the Lions to a championship, invented the nickel defense, not George Allen, Buddy Parker. And we can't get Buddy Parker in.
Yeah, and speaking to your thought process of layers, by the way, the young gun, Micah Parsons, getting set to enter his third NFL season, just 24 years old. He has a similar mindset, already eyeing the Hall of Fame down the line, but said, when you talk about great careers, when you talk about the Hall of Fame, I don't just want to make the Hall of Fame. I want to be known as one of the greatest Hall of Famers. And that's kind of that same thought process, right? The old Deion Sanders, like, my jacket's not the same as your jacket, right?
Yeah, that's the problem. And there should all the jackets should be alike, but the problem is they're letting more and more people in. And so now we have to have classes, and we have to have distinction. Yes, you're a Hall of Fame player, but you know you're not in the Hall. I mean, there's Don Coryell's in. Mike Shanahan's not in. Mike Holmgren's not in yet, right? Marty Schottenheimer's won 200 games, which is only one of 9 people. He's not in. Dan Reeves, 200 wins. He's not in. So there has to be a little bit more of an understanding. It's a political arena, and that's why we need classes, because it's easy to put great players in. It's those marginal ones. And then once you put one that you put Tommy McDonald in and you put Harold Carmichael in, how do you keep some other players out? I'm not saying they don't belong in there, but they're gonna be at a level that's different than Randy Moss's level.
For sure. And again, a reminder, Football Done Right coming out September 5th. Get the pre-orders in while you can. And I mean, it's so cool right now in the NFL watching so many players that we know are future Hall of Famers, like Aaron Rodgers walking through before the Hall of Fame game and looking at all the busts and knowing that his is going to be there one day. A young guy like Patrick Mahomes, who's only had a handful of years in the league, but already accomplished so much, and you can't wait to see what more can grow from that. Let's get continue moving along, though, Michael, with some reports that have been coming out of a number of these training camps. And I have to make the distinction of calling them reports because these are great. They are. This segment called News or Noise, we're going to hit a couple of the reports that are coming out of camp, and you let me know if this is legit news or something we should be ignoring. The Baltimore Ravens have had a, you know, relatively smooth sailing, we've heard so far, that first week or so of training camp, but hit some rough waters this weekend. Specifically, offensively, quarterback Lamar Jackson punted the ball downfield, threw his helmet in frustration after a play. Mark Andrews got an unsportsmanlike conduct for shouting an expletive at a referee, not for not getting a PI call. So some, you know, frustrations boiling over at camp. And this comes after OC Todd Monken said that the unit is not nearly where it needs to be. Is this news or noise?
Well, I think what Monken said is news, that they're not where they need to be. But how could they be, right? How could they be when they're learning a new offense, when they're trying to change their identity? It's going to take some time. I think what we have to remember, we call training camp practice. All due respect to Allen Iverson, practice.
We're talking about practice.
And part of practice is mistakes. You want to make mistakes. It's not rehearsal. You're not going out there to be perfect. You want to make mistakes. So when I read about quarterbacks throwing interception in practice, right? They're trying to put the ball somewhere where it doesn't go. And what is the greatest thing a coach can have is when a player makes a mistake to coach him on it. When the mistake doesn't count. The mistake doesn't count. Mm-hmm. So the overreaction to a lot of this, to me, is more media-driven than it is. On one hand, Monkton's right. That's news. They're going to take some time to get acquainted with the offense. It's going to take some comfort. It's going to take a lot of people to get together. Because remember, all the OTA days and minicamp are different. There's no real pads or competition. Now they've got to work on it. It's going to be a work in progress.
And to your point, using that word perfect, John Harbaugh said they're chasing perfectionism. And so that's when perfect is the goal, obviously there are going to be mistakes, but it's good that it's happening in practice. Speaking of practice, Jimmy Garoppolo has thrown a lot of interceptions here so far, Michael. He had three of them in Saturday's padded practice, at least two others dropped by DBs, and four in an indoor non-padded practice. News or noise, how are we feeling about Jimmy G?
Well, I think, obviously, Jimmy can't throw the ball to the other team. He had 16 touchdowns, four interceptions last year. But, look, I haven't been around Jimmy. And seeing Jimmy, Jimmy has never been an elite practice player. In fact, his first year, that we were really concerned about Jimmy a lot. In 2014, we went to Richmond to scrimmage against then the Washington Redskins. And Jimmy was not very good. In the game, Jimmy became very good. Jimmy became a better game player than a practice player. I don't know what that means, but sometimes he may take too many chances. Look, he's learning a new offense. Mm-hmm. He hasn't been in this offense for a while. I mean, one thing I do know, once you get to the regular season and the game plan becomes tailored and you get those reps, you can work on it. Look, the best thing that could happen is let him throw the picks. Because now you can coach him on it. Now you got a chance to coach him up on it. That's the greatest thing a coach has.
And we do have to remember he missed the entire on-field portion of off-season practices to this point. You said he's still getting used to his receivers, learning everybody. And maybe this is, let's just take this as a good sign that maybe the defense is getting better. The Raiders could certainly use the help on that side of the ball. We got to step aside, turn in our attention to the Green Bay Packers and Dolphins for the rest of the hour.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all of the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to the VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. You can also check in the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. This is the final weekend, though, to sign up at our lowest price of the summer. Sign up today, just $19 for your first month at VSiN.com/subscribe. Stormy Bonantoni and Michael Lombardi with you here on a Sunday morning. And for the final half hour of this opening hour, Michael, we're going to talk to Sports Illustrated beat writers who cover both the Packers and the Miami Dolphins. First, Omar Kelly, and then Bill Huber, who covers the Packers. And I wanted to kind of set the scene, give a little lay of the land before we dive in specifically to what the two of them have been seeing at training camps. Both of them had stadium practices over the weekend, full stadium, full of fans. So lots of eyeballs on these teams. And also two teams that, believe it or not, have some similarities. So both of their starting quarterbacks in Tua Tagovailoa and Jordan Love, despite being at very different spots in their careers, still coming out of that 2020 NFL draft class. Both head coaches were also part of that Mike Shanahan coaching tree in Washington from 2011 to 2013. So where things sit right now, who do you think, I know that you think that the Packers are in a better position than most people believe. And I think that it's good just to dive into why you feel that way first.
Well, I mean, look, I think when you have to look at the last half of the season, right? And so, the Packers struggled during the season defensively, had a lot of guys injured, and that affected them, right? So, but once they got Alexander back and their defensive front started to come back and play, they played really good defense down the stretch. They gave up 17 points over the last half of the season. Yeah. Now, they turned the ball over way too much offensively. I mean, they held Detroit to 34 points in two games defensively. That's a pretty good thing, right? They blew out a playoff team in Minnesota 41-17. They, in fact, beat the Miami Dolphins 6-20. I just feel like their defense is played well. They turned the ball over. They created four turnovers against Miami, four against Minnesota, 3, believe it or not, against Chicago. I don't know how people could turn the ball over against Chicago, but that's another story. But the reality of it is I think their defense is pretty good, healthy, and they'll be back. And all they need to do, really, what they need to do is get decent production out of their quarterback. And Aaron didn't play well last year, but neither did a lot of the skill players, too. We saw it took a little bit of time, but what Watson, Christian Watson, once he started to get into gear, all of a sudden he became an outside force. So I just think they've got a lot of positivity going for them. They don't have the cloud of Rodgers hanging over them. Mm-hmm. And I think they'll be better defensively than they were last year.
And if the defense does indeed take another step forward, all that's going to do is help out your young quarterback as well. And when it comes to Jordan Love, are you getting the feel that he'll be able to step in from day one and really hit the ground running? Or I mean, because that's what they want from this guy. It's funny, hear LaFleur say earlier in the offseason, hey, let's limit the expectations a little bit. And then you hear the complete opposite from other people in position of like high leadership in the organization that are saying, oh, yeah, we expect a lot out of Jordan Love. And we're going to know pretty quickly if he's our starter of the future.
Yeah, I think, look, he's got a really good 2 running backs, so they can run the ball. The offensive line is basically intact, and especially with Bakari coming back at left tackle, completely healthy for the season. My concern more about the Packer offense lies with LaFleur than it does with Love. Is he going to manage the team? You know, one of the things you have to do as a head coach of an NFL team, you hold this prestigious job, one of 32 gentlemen. You have to decide at some point in the month of August, probably give it to the 20th of August. Who are we? Who are we? And how are we going to win? You just can't go out there and say, this is how we're going to win because this is what I want to do. You've got to decide how do you need to play to win. And I think LaFleur misses that completely. And so I see them being a team that play action passes, run the football effectively, make some plays down the field. I think Love can throw the ball really effectively down the field. And if he can do that and they can play solid defense and they've improved in the kicking game with Rich Bisacci and their return game, I think all 3 elements have to come together to allow them to win. So I don't see why people are so down on them. I mean, people are up on the Lions, right? Mm-hmm. And if you ask anybody, you know, why did they lose to the Lions last year, the Packers? 2 games they lost to the Lions. They had 5 turnovers in the game. Look no further than Aaron Rodgers in that game. I mean, that's the reality. Turn the ball over.
Yeah.
I mean, Detroit, the first game in Detroit at the Ford Field, I mean, he had 2 red zone interceptions. Now, one of them was a stupid call, tight end out in the flat. But the reality of it is they had opportunities to win both those games. They just couldn't make the plays that needed to win them.
Yeah, 71% win percentage for LaFleur as the head coach of the Green Bay Packers. But now this is really the first time we're going to have to figure out what kind of a coach he is, because 2 of those seasons were MVP seasons from Aaron Rodgers. And last year when he didn't have success, the team didn't have success. So this will be an interesting year. You mentioned just the challenge that Matt LaFleur is going to have managing the team. I think Mike McDaniel has a challenge in managing his offense as well. We know how much he likes to utilize those weapons that he has through the air. Very, very talented wide receiver core. But for a guy, and I will continue to hammer this home, Michael, for a guy that is considered a run game guru, we have seen nothing in the ground game. Are we going to in 2023?
Well, it's funny. Even the guys on the Playmakers podcast that they were talking about, they're making fun of LaFleur. They're saying the same thing that I said. You know, this guy got the head coaching job, and these are coaches. McVay, they're like, he got the head coaching job because he can run the ball, and he rarely calls a run.
I'm only 1 episode in, so I haven't gotten there yet.
It's kind of a funny thing how they're doing it. But he did nothing. Again, this comes back to how do I help my quarterback? How do I help my defense? I truly believe this, Stormy. I am not a proponent of establishing the run. I am not. I am not at all. I know that you need explosive plays in the passing game to score points. However, that being said, you need to control the pace of the game. You need to be able to protect your quarterback. You need to take the burden of responsibility off the quarterback at times. And last year, you know, the Miami offense was only on the field for 29-20. Yeah. And their defense was on the field for 30-40. And they couldn't hold up. Now, did they look great? Sure. But when they got on that 5-game losing streak, they couldn't stop anybody. They couldn't stop the 49ers. They couldn't stop the Patriots. They couldn't stop the Packers. I mean, they just had a hard time. And because of that, you know, they have no physicality. And their offensive line is a weak area. And their quarterback is prone to get injured.
Yeah.
Well, so why not protect them?
True. And I also feel like no matter how talented your skill players are, if you're one-dimensional, other teams are going to figure a way to combat that to an extent. Win total, of course, for the Miami Dolphins sitting at 9.5.
Where are you on their win total? Where are you on their win total?
So I can't get on board with anything Miami just because I don't have the confidence in the health of their quarterback. And so I could be completely wrong, and Tua Tagovailoa could be incredible this year and continue to light it up in the air and have all the stats and XYZ. I find it hard to believe that for a guy who has had injuries consistently dating back to high school, that he's going to give you 15 plus games this season.
Yeah, I mean, and then when you really examine their season, the comeback win against Baltimore in week two, right? I mean, Pittsburgh's driving the ball down the field on that Sunday night. Now, they only scored 16 points against Pittsburgh. You know, nobody gives Pittsburgh any credit for being a good team. The great Miami offense only scored – this is with Tua at quarterback, right? Yeah. This is with Tua at quarterback. And Pickett throws all those picks in that game. They could have lost that game, you know. And when you look at the Detroit game, I mean, that's a back-and-forth game. And then Tua got hurt. But, look, you know, their defense will be improved because I think Vic will play more zone. Mm-hmm. He'll take some of the pressure off of playing zero coverage like Josh Boyer did last year. But still – at some point, when they go against good defensive coaches, mm-hmm. they're going to force them to have to check the ball down, to run the football. They're not going to just let Tyreek Hill and Waddle just run all catch yeah. passes all over them.
Well, and playing in the AFC East, like, this is a schedule that's not a cakewalk. They're going to have competitive defenses regularly.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what Omar says about what they're doing down there, and are they going to try to protect their quarterback? You know, mm-hmm. him getting bigger doesn't protect them. Because big guys get hurt. Josh Allen's a big guy. He got hurt, right? Ben Roethlisberger's a big guy. He got hurt. Like, that has nothing to do with if someone's getting a clean hit on you, I don't care how big you are. You got the propensity to get hurt.
Like, I know it's cool that when Tua had, like, a weird moment at practice the other day, he essentially did a backflip and credited the way that he's learned how to fall differently this past offseason.
Yeah, that's worked.
How far is that really going to take us, though? We'll see. But I think I agree. It'll be good to get an opinion from Omar Kelly, beat writer for the Miami Dolphins at Sports Illustrated. He has been out there at training camp. He has been watching how Vic Fangio has been handling the defense. He's been watching Tua Tagovailoa every single day. So get the lowdown on all things Miami Dolphins when we return here on the Lombardi Line. Still so much more to come, covering all things NFL as training camps roll on. Don't go anywhere. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
While conference realignment might be driving us crazy for everything that's going on in the future, we still have futures to bet on this season, ladies and gentlemen. And the VSiN College Football Betting Guide has you ready for this upcoming season. This year's College Football Preview magazine includes season win total picks and previews for all 133 FBS teams, plus feature articles on how to create your own power ratings model, calculate home field advantage, and who to bet on for the Heisman. Get Matt Heumann's preseason top 25, Steve Mackinnon's top betting systems, and everything you need to know to be ready for kickoff. College Football Betting Guide's out now. One of many benefits to becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber. You can sign up now at vsin.com/subscribe. But we're going to stick with the NFL for now. The Miami Dolphins, fun fact, have the shortest preseason odds in their division since 2006. One significant injury has already hit the defense, with Jalen Ramsey needing knee surgery and health concerns naturally for the most important position on the field in quarterback Tua Tagovailoa. To help us talk it all over, we bring in Omar Kelly, Dolphins reporter for Sports Illustrated, covers the team very closely, at Omar Kelly on Twitter. And before we get to football, Omar, I got to tell you, I heard in the commercial break the cutest little voice in the background. I thought we might have a guest analyst.
Oh, yeah. I'm doing daddy daycare today. Mommy went to get the hair done. Daddy's got a day off from training camp, so it's all me right now.
Yeah, I love it, Omar. That's awesome. That's great. You know, it's hard. You know, I got five grandchildren that want to get on the air all the time, too, so I can understand it. Yeah. But yeah. You get a day off. So talk to us a little bit. I've been harping on this. I know Mike McDaniel's kind of an eccentric character, and everybody loves him. But we know that he kind of is the offensive coordinator, and the special teams coach coaches the special teams, and Vic coaches defense. Has there been any emphasis on perhaps trying to run the football this year as opposed to being 31st in attempts last year?
Oh, man, you hit the nail on the head. You know, what people don't know about Mike McDaniel, most people, I'm sure you do, is that he's a run game specialist. That's where he carved out his lane in the NFL. And if there's anything that he was ashamed of last year, let's start with the penalties, and they were one of the most penalized teams in the NFL. But he was really ashamed of how much he fell in love with the pass game and became obsessed with it and wasn't able to or didn't rely on his running game. And what the one thing about Mike McDaniel is anywhere he's been, there's been a second-year emphasis and jump on the run game to wherever they started, they usually finished in the top 10 the next season. Now, based on what I'm seeing so far, and keep in mind, they're just pads, no contact, no tackling. I'll have a better indication based on what we see in the joint practices next week against the Falcons. But I can honestly say I'm not really that impressed with what I've seen from the run game. And I think it has more to do with the offensive linemen, especially without Teron Armstead, than it does have to do with the backs that are in the backfield.
Well, and I think, Omar, that's a big reason why so many Miami Dolphins fans are clamoring for the hometown guy, mm-hmm. Dalvin Cook, to be brought into that offense, because with an offensive line that struggled, he's a guy that we know is shifty enough that can make plays on his own. Is that still a reality that Dalvin Cook could be brought in? I know that we've heard that it would be a luxury for the Dolphins, but I think it might be a little more than that.
Yeah, I definitely think it's a little bit more than that. Right now, Jeff Wilson and Devon Achane, they're battling injuries, and not to say that that's going to force their hand one way or the other. The offer to Dalvin Cook is what the offer is, and I don't know if Dalvin's going to take it. I don't know if he's going to wait to see what the market or if a back goes down in the exhibition season. He's making $2 million from the Minnesota Vikings. He doesn't seem to be in a rush to join any team. And if he does join Miami, he's familiar with their offense because they ran the offense during his best season in Minnesota, where the offensive coordinator was can't remember his name right now, but he basically gave Mike McDaniel his first NFL coaching job. So it's the same similar offense. He's a wide zone specialist. He didn't sign with the Jets. Miami is not going to improve their offer. It's really up to Dalvin Cook to determine whether or not he wants to take it.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the elephant in the room, which is this offensive line. For all the great skill that they have, Omar, you know, are we sure Austin Jackson can be? Well, I mean, I'm talking about the wide receiver, Waddle and Hill, right? After that, it gets a little iffy, right? So, I mean, Austin Jackson and Armstead. I think Armstead's, you know, when he plays, he's really a good player, but he doesn't play all the time. Mm-hmm. He's always hurt. Jackson, yeah. Hunt, Connor Williams, I mean, Etchenberg. I mean, this is not an offensive line. I think what happens to a lot of us is we focus that Tua got hurt last year, but two quarterbacks miss games for the Dolphins because of this offensive line. Have you seen any improvement there at all?
I've seen improvement from Austin Jackson. I would say in the 9 practices we've had, he's probably had 1 negative day. Every day has been an even or above. And in fact, I would argue to you that he's really been making Jalen Phillips look like a lesser player than he really is. Because I think Jalen Phillips is an amazing player and a young budding talent in this NFL. But Austin Jackson's improved. I think Liam Eikenberg has regressed. And if you watched him play last year, you would say, is there room for regression? I watch him every day, and it's a loss every day. And in fairness to Austin, he's going against Christian Wilkins, who right now I really didn't think Christian could get better, and he really has gotten better. He's more of a pass rusher right now. He's extremely disruptive. They can't block him in practice. Mike McDaniel basically said Christian sets a tone for our practice every single day, and that is accurate. And Zach Sealer is no slouch either. So, you know, I'm going to watch the joint practices against Atlanta, see how this interior line does against Grady Jarrett before I sound the alarms. But I really think this is Isaiah Wynn's job. When he gets himself ready and comfortable at guard, he's going to be taking that job at left guard. But really, I need to see the center and Robert Hunt take a next step forward, because it's right now it's just not good enough for me.
Miami Dolphins reporter for Sports Illustrated joining us here on the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Do you what's your level of expectations for the quarterback in Tua Tagovailoa this year?
I expect him to use this season to transcend to become one of the NFL's upper echelon quarterbacks. There is no defense that he hasn't seen. There's no blitz that he hasn't faced. He's got one of the best arsenals of wide receivers in the NFL. Yeah, his line's a little shaky, but he's got a respectable stable of running backs. And for the first time since his high school years, he's in the same offense for the second season. There should be a significant jump from being the number one rated quarterback in the NFL. Now, that, of course, is all contingent on him staying healthy. I have seen less balls on the ground in practice. I've seen a deep ball completed at ease. I saw him struggle with Vic Fangio's zone the first week and then come up with zone beaters the second week. He's ready to transcend and become an echelon quarterback. They had a bad scrimmage yesterday offensively. They just got beaten down by the defense, which, you know, was a surprise to me, but not really. And defense is usually ahead at this stage in the game. But Tua reamed out his offense after the huddle. It was very animated, hand motions, hand gestures. And that's something that we haven't seen so far. And he, one of the main criticisms of him 2 years ago, he needs to step forward and be a better leader. And we're starting to see that now. It's everything that you want to see from your quarterback in terms of the growth and progression. He's showing you that.
Omar, last year they were a blitz zero. Josh Boyer would bring it, even though he had no corners that could cover. I thought Xavier Howard, who was once a really good player, took a huge decline in terms of his play. How does he look, and what does their corner situation look now that Ramsey's hurt?
Xavier was playing with two, not one, but two groin injuries, which, you know, is difficult. And then Josh Boyer clearly had him still shadowing the best receiver on the opposition's team. So even though Xavier made the Pro Bowl, that was on reputation alone. Xavier's really in a contract year because none of his money is guaranteed after the season. So Xavier's all about money. So expect a bounce back season from him. Their number two cornerback is Kader Kohou, who had a very impressive season last year as an undrafted rookie. He is going to be their nickel. Now, whether he plays on the boundary or not really comes down to whether Noah Igbinoghene continues to be respectable. He's been a former first-round bust who has really benefited from switching to the zone scheme. And he's had solid practices, came down with an interception yesterday. And then they've got Cam Smith, who is the second-round pick, a rookie from South Carolina, and he's doing quite well.
Omar, we're up against it, but appreciate your insight so much. Work. Thanks for doing this.
Take care of the little guy, Omar. Thank you.
Yes. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, at Omar Kelly as well. Got a new article up on Sports Illustrated a couple days ago breaking down some of those battles at camp. We got to take a break. More Packers talk.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Calling all BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Well, here's a chance for both of you to earn a $100 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program. That'll send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, they'll get a $100 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with that bonus and the wager is settled, you'll get a $100 bonus yourself. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 and up only to wager. New promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Reward issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 30 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Massachusetts, Mississippi, and Nevada. Story about Tony and Michael Lombardi with you as we roll along here on this Sunday edition of the Lombardi Line. And for back-to-back segments, we're going to keep it in the Sports Illustrated family, but from Miami, Florida to a slightly colder area of the country by nature, Green Bay, Wisconsin. Packers reporter Bill Huber joins us at Bill Huber NFL. 70,000 fans packed Lambeau Field this weekend. Packers family night practice yesterday, Bill. How was everything? What are some of your takeaways? And thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. I don't think there's anything that was like earth-shattering last night. Jordan Love has had some up and down moments throughout camp, and that's kind of how he was last night. He had a real rough start. I mean, look, everybody cares about the quarterback. He had a rough start last night. I think he was 1 out of 5 to start. But he ended the night with a 2-minute drill, which couldn't have been run any better, and with a pinpoint touchdown to Christian Watson, who's obviously their great hope to be the next great receiver. So a strong ending, a rough start, but all in all, not too bad considering the defense, I think, is pretty good.
Yeah, nobody talks about the defense, Bill. I mean, they gave up about 17 points the last half of the five games. They held Detroit to 34 points in two games. Could have won both that they didn't turn it over. I think it's the untold story of the Packers. They're better on defense than people think. But let's keep going down this Jordan Love reign. I'm really high on the Packers. I think they're better than 7.5 wins. My only concern isn't Jordan Love, is what will Matt LaFleur change the offense to fit Jordan Love? Have you seen any modification within their offensive scheme?
Well, yeah, it's a good question. It's trial and error. I mean, which is kind of weird to say because, you know, Love has been here for 3 years with LaFleur. But, yeah, even LaFleur said it. They need to find out what he likes. So they're throwing the whole menu at him, and they're going to kind of narrow things down as they go. I do think you'll see more quarterback movement than you have, you know, which is kind of the obvious thing because Love's an athletic guy and Rodgers, by the end of his career, was not. So I think you'll see some more of that. Probably lean more on the running game, which they probably should have been doing all along because Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon are really good. So I would think it'll be a lot of early running to set up, which is the whole LaFleur, Shanahan, McVay offenses, passes that look like runs. So I think you're going to see a lot of early runs to set up bootlegs for some easy completions to get them going, and then you can kind of open things up.
When it comes to Jordan Love, I feel like the general expectations nationally are that, hey, the Packers are going to struggle. There's going to be some growing pains with their young quarterback, a huge step down from a multi-MVP QB in Aaron Rodgers. And I do agree with that on the surface, except for the fact that Aaron Rodgers is coming off one of the worst years of his career ever. You know, like he wasn't the asset that he's been years past for Green Bay. So is it kind of an unfair expectation for Jordan Love to step up and be worse than what we saw last season? Like, I feel like just a general, like being average will be perfectly fine for Jordan Love.
Yes, that's a great point. Look, if you just base it on quarterback rating, which I tend to do, I think it's a good number, as convoluted as it is. I mean, Rodgers was an average quarterback last year. And in some ways, if you look at like completion percentage of yards per attempt, he's a below average quarterback. I do think if you're going to compare him to Rodgers, just compare him to the 2022 version, you're probably going to be okay. What gives you some hope, I mean, the guy can really throw it, right? I mean, there's nothing that he can't do. And the growing pains last year were with those young receivers. Well, Christian Watson and Romeo Dobbs have gone through it for years. So you should probably be better at receiver than you were. The quarterback will probably be okay. And the offensive line should be better too. It was such a revolving door last year with Bakhtiari in and out of the lineup with the knee and then an appendectomy. So if Bakhtiari's fine, and Elton Jenkins is a year past his ACL, the line should be better. The receivers should be better. As long as the quarterback is okay, doesn't screw things up. Yeah, you're probably right. I do think he's probably being slept on from a comparison perspective.
Yeah, and they're going to be better at tight end too, Bill. I mean, when you think they draft
sure.
Luke Musgrave, I would love to know what you think of Musgrave and Tucker Kraft, the kid from South Dakota State, as they've kind of integrate themselves into the offense.
Yeah, I am leading the Luke Musgrave bandwagon here. I want to say I might have the numbers a little bit wrong here, but I want to say if you take the top two rookie tight ends in Packers history and combine them, it's like 55 catches for 600 yards combined. I think Musgrave can get to that. He is so big and so athletic. I mean, if you look at the combine numbers, it was, 6'6", and he ran a 4.640. I'm telling you, he's faster than that in pads. I know he didn't do much at Oregon State. He might have last year, if not for the injury. But he is so talented. He is just so talented. And Tucker Kraft hadn't really done much at all, but last night at Family Eye, he was really good. Someone's got a block, right? Mercedes Lewis is gone. He was that dirty work guy here for 4 or 5 years. Kraft was had a good night as a blocker last night. And, you know, if he can catch it pretty well, which he's got a history of doing so, that's going to be a really good 1-2 punch. Better than Tunyon and Lewis were last year. And as much as LaFleur loves tight ends, that's going to be a big asset for him.
Sports Illustrated Packers reporter Bill Huber joining us here on the Lombardi Line. And when you look at the odds board for the division, and obviously we're a betting network, we look at things through that lens and that perspective. It is so strange to see the Green Bay Packers at the bottom of the division and the Detroit Lions at the top of it. Where do you feel like the Packers stack up division-wise?
Yeah, it's hard to put them ahead of Detroit. It's probably hard to put them ahead of Minnesota. I realize the Vikings have some pretty noteworthy question marks there too, but it's still Kirk Cousins and Justin Jefferson, and that's better than Green Bay has, at least at this point as we talk here today. I don't know what to make of the Bears, right? Justin Fields has been bad for 2 years. I understand the hype. I understand that he had no receivers. So we're going to find out about him. You kind of feel like Green Bay and Chicago are kind of at the same place quarterback-wise, and I think national perspective is the Bears are – got a really good quarterback in Fields. I'm like, well, let's see him do it. Maybe he is great. I'm not peeing on the guy. I'm trying to think of a better word. I just don't know. Right. He's got a lot to prove and he's got some receivers out there now, but yeah, I can see, you know, Minnesota, Chicago, Green Bay kind of battling out for second place, you know, 7, 8, 9 wins. It is a mediocre group for sure. I am a believer in Detroit. It's been a long time since anybody said that, but they seem to have the complete group, at least compared to the rest of the division.
Well, I mean, you got to think the Packers are fairly confident. I mean, they held Detroit to 34 points in 2 games.
Yeah.
They've been able to put pressure on Goff. And, you know, if it's not for the 5 turnovers that they committed in both those games, I mean, they could have easily had opportunities to win. So there's got to be a sense of confidence. And talk about their defense a little bit. I mean, I think with Jai Alexander healthy for the whole season could make a huge difference. I think, you know, Walker has been a really nice addition to their defensive front. I thought he played well last year. So, I mean, do you feel like the defense is looking the same as they did at the second half of the season?
Yeah, the big question here is can they stop the run? I mean, they haven't stopped the run since like 2010, the second, you know, the stretch run to the Super Bowl season. I'm not exaggerating. They've just been terrible every year. They're terrible against the run. This offseason, they let Dean Lowry go and they let Jaron Reed go. Those are two veteran defensive linemen, flawed guys, mind you, but they're still veteran defensive linemen who've been there and they've done that, and they're replacing them with T.J. Slayton and Devontae Wyatt, the first-round pick last year. So maybe it'll be okay there, but now you're replacing Slayton and Wyatt as the backups with a fourth-round pick, Colby Wooden from Auburn, a sixth-round pick, Carl Brooks from Bowling Green, and Jonathan Ford, who was a seventh-round pick last year who played exactly 0 snaps. So I want to know how they're going to stop the run. Maybe they'll be better. Again, this is the great unknown more than criticism. They had a good night last night, but if they can't stop the run, then they're up a creek because this defense is built to intercept quarterbacks. But say Alexander and Douglas are really good. The pass rush is really good, but you can't play pass defense if it's 3rd and 1 all the time, you know?
Yeah, no doubt.
Bill, awesome stuff. We'll be sure to check in with you again during the season. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate you. Great job.
Thanks. Take care. Bye.
Make sure you follow him as well on Twitter at Bill Huber NFL. And Michael, as soon as he brought up what he did about Justin Fields, I thought he's speaking our language.
I said nothing.
I was proud
nothing.
Of you.
Bill can come back on the show anytime. At least he's objective. At least he's being objective. I mean, he witnessed it, right? It was there. He's not making stuff up. I thought it was interesting what he said about their defense stopping the run. I do think that's a concern. but also about how good they are defensively. Like, I think this team's a lot closer than people think they are.
I think so, too. Expectations, though, low. Favored to miss the playoffs for the first time since 2009, and their longest Super Bowl odds and lowest win total at 7.5 since 2007, the first year Aaron Rodgers was not their starter. We're going to step aside, start off hour two with a Sunday edition of No Way or No Doubt. You won't want to miss it.